welcome back once again to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth, and ecstatic to have you guys once again. Today, you get a little bit of inside scoop, a little behind-the-scenes action about a project that only exists in Jeremy's mind that is now coming to fruition. That's right. You're going to get some behind-the-scenes info on Baby Eater, a Jeremy Woodworth film. Should be pretty exciting. You're going to want to stick around and listen to that. If I can implore you guys to leave us a 5-star rating on the iTunes, the Stitcher, whatever platform you do listen to us on, we do appreciate it. It costs you nothing and means the world to us. So without further ado, get strapped in, turn the volume up to 11, and get ready for Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Get a t-shirt from the Upright Citizens Brigade
20 years ago
with Amy Poehler on it.
Okay, she's still funny. She's still popular. I just don't like her anymore.
You just don't like her?
Yeah.
She's like the girl that you dated and then date somebody better than you, and now you can't like her anymore.
I hate to say that she was such a good actress and so many good characters on UCB. I actually thought that she was actually what's her name from Strangers with Candy. Jerry Bowler or something.
Jerry's very funny though. Jerry,
yeah,
I'm surprised she never made the, no, she was on SNL. She was on SNL for a little bit too.
I don't know.
She did. She made it. She made it.
Her new show with the cooking show making fun of Annette Flanders is pretty good, so.
I do like Strangers with Candy. And that was Stephen Colbert at his best, if you ask me.
Hells,
that
yeah.
was the best Stephen Colbert we ever had.
Steve Noblet.
God, he was so good. Well, anyway, hey, welcome back to Quality Time, everybody. Look, we made it through a full intro without anything I had to edit. Oh, my God, yes.
I love it that it's just the two of us.
Yeah, it's just the two
fight,
of us.
The chance that we might just go at each other is
dude, there might
60%.
Be a, there's a fucking fist fight in the air tonight. My name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you very much for joining us again on another exciting episode of Quality Time. And I'm joined by none other than my blood, my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, sir?
You're wrong tonight.
When am I right at this point, Jeremy? What the fuck?
This is the same bit I've been doing since almost every podcast. This is Robert Patrick. And of course, I did remember working with Jeremy on Ladder 49. Yes. Being a rubber face.
That is true. Jeremy, you worked with the guy who was in Terminator 2, Robert Patrick, in Ladder 49.
Hells,
what
yeah.
Can you tell our listeners what you did to him the first time you met Robert Patrick?
Yeah, he's hanging out with us extras in a big giant room together. Pretty much anybody that was any actor in Baltimore was on Ladder 49. It
because
was
he's a man of the people. He's not going to hide himself. His Robert Patrick is a guy that gets down and dirty with everybody.
Very, very down to earth, very nice. And, of course, I went out of my way to find the actual picture of Eddie Furlong from T2 online to print out a copy and ask him face-to-face if he knew this boy. So... Yeah.
Now, two questions from this. One, how did he react to that?
He's like, oh, no, he's grown up now. That boy is a grown up. He's acting and everything. So I think he actually...
Yeah, he was in a much bigger movie called Brain Scan.
And Pecker. the Baltimore film about young John Waters, or Roger Waters, as I prefer to call him. So well,
the fun part, Jeremy, about this movie, because tonight we're doing T2. We've done the Terminator 1 on this show before, but the actors who weren't in Terminator 1, we've all featured in other episodes already. Jeremy, can you name what Quality Time episode we've already featured with Ed Furlong?
I'm going to guess the episode that I wasn't here for, which was Johnny Mnemonic.
No, no, no.
Brain Scan.
It was Brain Scan, yeah, yeah.
Which I never saw.
Which I just did
for.
With I did with Christopher Lawrence, yeah. Which is a great film to start off
still
our Ed Furlong series. And then there was another actor in this film who you just mentioned, which is Robert Patrick, and we've done another episode with Robert Patrick as well.
Was that I can't remember.
If I gave you the guess, do you think you can remember?
Of course.
Okay, it was Ryan Nazer's episode.
I'm going to say Free Jack.
We've never done Free Jack. You don't even know the movies that we've done on this show. I gave you the toss up. No,
it was the X-Files movie.
We did Fire in the Sky, he's a lead in Fire in the Sky.
The alien rape movie.
So. Yeah, yeah. How do you forget an alien rape movie, Jeremy? It was for you.
It wasn't a big,
I do this show for you.
It wasn't a big role for him, and it was not... The alien rape was the only good part of the movie anyway, so...
Wrong.
I really call the movie Rape in the Sky.
Rape in the Sky.
And also, I also love the James Jewison song called Rape in the Sky, you know. There's a rape in the sky. Gonna go when I die.
I always liked the Kansas version, which was a rape in the sky, keep on turning. I don't know if I'll rape alone.
Rape in the sky keeps on turning.
Was that's a Kansas song, right? Am I right?
Or Boston or Chicago. I don't know.
I'll let Joe Robinson correct this. I think it's a Kansas song, but I know the internet's right in front of me. I fly off the cuff, though. I go hard.
My favorite band is Ohio.
Ohio.
and Nevada. So
my favorite, I'm a big fan of Poughkeepsie. Poughkeepsie is my favorite band. They're They Might Be Giants cover band.
I think another good name for a band would be called the Scranton Butt Rapists.
Scranton Butt Rapist is actually a really good punk band name.
It would really go good on the marquee. So.
The Scranton Butt Rapists.
Yeah. So.
I like that. Now, Jeremy, we were supposed to have a special guest this week who flipped out. I flaked out on us. And I say that without any malice because I let her off the hook because when she scheduled this in the back of my head, I'm like, she's not going to want to do this today.
You meant to say she was flipping a house somewhere.
Yeah, so Wendy Townsend from 98 Rock was supposed to join us today, and she was moving today, and she said, yeah, I can move and still do this, and I thought it was a terrible idea, and so I gave her a chance to get out. I didn't press her. I was like, listen, we'll just schedule it. Because, here's the thing. When we get Wendy back in the studio here, I don't want an angry Wendy. You understand? Like I want Wendy on her A game. I don't want B game Wendy who's looking at the clock, doesn't want to be around you, which I understand. Like Jeremy, you have to build up to be around a Jeremy Woodworth.
And I was so upset because I had my roofies ready to go. So
yeah, and I've been taking them. So good luck on this episode.
Eric always takes one for the roofie team.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah.
Not the first time at a bar that he's taking a roofie.
Nope, and won't be the last. Won't be the last. Check out earlier eps. Holler at your boy. Jeremy, what else were you... There was other things we were going to
talk about. Let's talk about the movie last night.
Oh, yeah, dude. So, Jeremy came over last night, and I had forgot about it until earlier in the week, until he reminded me. But we had scheduled a date to start your film project called... Baby Eater.
Yes, the worst taste in horror.
Is that what it's called?
The worst taste in horror. That's the true name of the film. So,
okay. Can if I could tell a bit from my perspective about this.
Yes.
Things I know about Baby Eater. Almost nothing. I know nothing about what Baby
and
Eater is.
You are the lead character.
I'm a lead actor in a movie that has no script, that for all intents and purposes is being written by Jeremy as we shoot it. I'm relatively certain that Jeremy is figuring it out as he goes.
I am a modern day Amadeus Mozart because it is already in my head. I just have to make sure I get every shot that is already in my head. So
you have these shot, like when coming into Baby Eater, you see things in your head.
Yes.
That like I need to shoot this, this, and this.
Yep.
And I'll make a story work around what all these shots are. Is that the goal?
And I had to say, even though I did have plenty of dialogue for your scene with the voiceover, I'd still be just as happy doing the voiceover myself because it'd be equally as funny. So,
I mean, listen, this is your baby eater. It's whatever you want to do with it. But you have to understand the level of anxiety that this gave me leading up to it, because I'm a planning guy. I'm a planner guy. I like to know what's going on beforehand so that, you know, I want to know what's happening so I can, oh, maybe we need this, this, and that. And the level of direction that you gave me was like, I need either uncooked or cooked ribs.
Right.
And you need to have a flannel shirt, which I gave you $4 to go to.
And I bought a shirt for $6.
Last week, I gave you $4, and you sprung for $6 shirt for me at the Goodwill. And the day of, okay, and not even the day of, hours before this shoot is scheduled, you throw on multiple things on me.
Well, I wasn't prepared with the blood.
Down. So Jeremy has no blood for it. So I go to go get the ribs. So I just ordered ribs from Chili's curbside to go. I was like, okay, I like ribs anyway, so I'm gonna get some ribs. I'll plan on eating these anyway, whatever's left over from the shoot. I go to pick them up. I also stop at the beer store, and I'm like, you know what? I'm out of beer, and when my guests come, I want to make sure that there's beer here, so I'm buying beer for Jeremy. Jeremy says, hey, I need, like, red fruit punch or something. I need something red for this, and I'm like, okay, I'm thinking out of the box. I'm at the gas register now. I have to go pick up these ribs in a second. I see red Gatorade. I'm like, oh, I got a red Gatorade bottle. It's like a 20-ouncer. He's like, can you get like a 2-liter of soda? There's no 2 liters at the fucking liquor store that I'm at right now.
Sometimes
I'm like,
there are.
So he's having me run errands. So I'm not only the lead actor in this, by the way. I'm the producer of the film as well. That is reacting to the things that you're coming up with as this is happening. So granted, I'm a little bit hungry. I'm a little bit hangry when this is happening because the Chili's food that I'm ordering is also food that I can actually eat. So I'm hungry. I was very stressed out when you threw this on my plate. So I say, Jeremy, why don't you go get it? He doesn't go get it. And then
I have no money. So
he's broke, which if you'd explained that to me, I probably would have acted differently. But he is like, do you have food currently? I have nothing. So now we have to improvise blood last night. And
it worked great.
The blood that we improvised was ketchup and syrup, a mixture that you put into a squirt bottle.
Yep.
That, listen, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a ketchup guy. I don't really like ketchup. I like ketchup maybe with my fries in, like, you know, ketchup and fries, that's about as far as I go. I don't really like it on my burgers, hot dogs. Get the fuck out of my house if you put ketchup on a hot dog. I don't want it. It's not meatloaf when it's baked, you know, a little ketchup on top. Yeah, I get it. But overall, I'm not really, like, you could take it away from all those situations, and I'm still equally as good, right?
Real tomato ketchup there, Lloyd. Only the best.
Well, you mix this mixture up, and the scenes where we were shooting, multiple times this ketchup syrup mixture, like, got into my mouth. And I'm legit ready to throw up every time it touches my leg. Like, I'm like, oh, it's like a watery ketchup mix. Never again. Never again. I don't care what the dollar amount is that we have to spend to get it. As lead producer of Baby Eater, as unwilling producer of Baby Eater, we need to have good, better fake blood. And Overall, though, I thought the shots turned out really good. We filmed it in my shed last night. Yeah. There was some good lighting. I will say, Jeremy is a director and as a cinematographer, Jeremy's very good.
I know what I want.
Contrary to what my comedy special would suggest, Jeremy's cinematographer
out of control.
When Jeremy's not trying to make it a bit, it's the project he wants to do. It's very, very good. So, kudos to you, Jer Bear.
Now you went far and beyond because I know you can bring the comedy gold, but you actually had enough energy with you to suggest the rib into the mouth scene. Which wasn't scheduled. That's all you. So I'm pretty sure we got exactly what we wanted. I don't think there should be a reshoot. I knew that once we do the blood, that was going to be it for the night. So that was safe till last.
I wanted to throw up every second that it was happening. Also, the shirt that I had, I threw it in the trash can. You're like, you still need that shirt. Well, that trash can I threw it is covered in dog shit in the inside.
It.
I mean, no, I'm keeping it as part of the character now. That is now part of the lure of that shirt. It's sitting in my garage with a little bit of dog poop. And a lot of bit of ketchup, and probably some maggots growing on it.
Okay, well, that's your costume.
I like that I finally grossed you out. It's hard to gross a Jeremy Woodworth out. Well, although I think I did it also with one of the shots that we did. There was a shot that was so uncomfortable for Jeremy that he actually wasn't watching it part of it while it was happening.
I knew that it was funny. I was just trying to keep from laughing. Just trying to keep from laughing so we could save some of the audio.
So check out Baby Eater. I think Jeremy is going to put together a rough cut of the scene, I think, in the near future. So be on the lookout. We're going to need some love. And there's going to be a Kickstarter, I think, based off of this little shot we did tonight to see if Baby Eater is something that you'd like to see a little bit more professionally produced.
I think people are ready to see somebody that eats babies.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, what's your Mount Rushmore of people that eat babies?
Well, we were in Baltimore, so, you know, people kill babies all the time, so they just don't eat them.
True that. So.
Anyway.
Are we ready to get into tonight's fiasco, tonight's feature film? Are we ready?
Sure. Bring it on, baby.
Tonight, we are going over probably the strongest, and maybe one of the strongest sequels we've ever done in Quality Time history.
Well, we haven't done Empire Strikes Back, so.
And I don't think we ever will. We're going over
Deadly Nights Part 2.
We're going over the 2017 classic T2 Trainspotting. Oh, wait a minute. No, sorry. The 1991 classic, James Cameron.
Lust for Life.
Terminator 2. Judgment Day.
The council has given me heroin to help train you.
I'm excited about this one. This is one that's been on the back burners for a while. We wanted to do it. It just hadn't panned out until today because we were supposed to have Wendy Townsend and she's not here. But now it's just the two of us.
Sure everybody that works at a movie theater has that song burned into their head for every Terminator video game that's in a theater. You get to hear that song over and over and over again.
Do you think so? Do you think that's a big deal
to them? That's why I'm pretty sure that Brian Glazer has heard that song like 1,000 times.
Wait a minute. Brian Glazer?
Yeah, not Ryan. Ryan Nazer.
Ryan Glacier.
Yeah.
Ryan Glacier.
Who's the one that worked in the theater? Is it Nazer or Glazer?
Does it matter at
Ryan
this point?
Laser.
Which one of our listeners
Brian
isn't
going
to understand your reference?
Brian
Is that what
Laser.
You're getting at?
Look, I only like comedians if they make theater jokes or about standees.
That makes sense. That speaks volumes about you.
And I'm in the crowd. I'm like, yeah, he's making jokes about standees. I build them for a living. Woo!
So what this is, I'd say this is James Cameron, not quite at his height, because I say height is probably
definitely at his height.
Well, to me personally, yes, I would say it's his height.
Oh,
but I would say
you're a Titanic fan.
I'm not a Titanic fan. I mean, personally, I think this is, but if you say that the height of James Cameron's directorial skills isn't Titanic, you're wrong.
You
it's one of the highest grossing films of all time.
You want to say it's
Abyss. Avatar?
You want to say it's Abyss because it has Chris Elliott in it.
I do like Abyss, but I like that he brought the character from Abyss into this movie.
Hell yeah, another good Brian Deal, whatever his name is, Corporal Hicks.
Corporal Hicks.
Corporate Hicks.
Michael Biehn.
Michael
Biehn. Is that what you're going?
Yes,
Michael
yes,
Biehn.
Michael Biehn.
Which, by the way, didn't know Michael Biehn is in this film as well. Because
and the deleted scenes.
And the deleted scenes, which are included in our review tonight. So,
I think that if you get like a big enough actor in any of your film, you should just have him come out behind a corner and just kind of wave to the audience like, hey, it's me. You know, it's Al Pacino.
Hey, it's me, Al Pacino.
I was in Godfather 3, but I'm supposed to be dead now. Hey, this is Godfather 4. So, The Quickening.
So, this movie... I'd say this is probably, to me, the beginning of the peak, okay? If there's a bell curve of James Cameron's movies, this is like near the top where he levels out, does a couple, and then it's been a steady decline since this. Because, I mean, what do we get after this? We get Titanic, right?
Only the biggest grossing film of almost all time.
And then only to the actual biggest grossing movie of all time, which is Avatar, right after this.
Oh, gosh.
Which, honestly, it isn't a great movie,
it's
not a great film. It is a great ride at Disney World, I'll tell you that.
It's just, that's where politics comes in, and there's no way it should ever be labeled as a good film, because it's like, oh, it's great. The Indians are great. They fuck everything from like trees to the earth and everything. It's like, no, it's a horrible film. It's pretentious. It's anti-American. It makes Americans the bad guys because we kill the Indians just at the drop of some unbelievable bilium that we can get for $5. It's like, okay, well, I want to come out of a movie feeling bad and guilty that I'm American. That's what I want to come out of, you know? Not a movie that builds you up in spirit, no.
Well, I think we should just look on the bright side about, you know, all this sweet white privilege that we live with now. I mean, that's probably, I mean, if it wasn't for our monster ancestors, I wouldn't have such a great life right now compared to everybody else. I mean,
exactly.
And I think that should be glorified more. That's where I'm at. So this movie opens up to the bleak future that we saw in part one. We get to see skulls strewn apart a gray landscape, barren wasteland, when all of a sudden we hear a familiar voice, none other than Linda Hamilton herself, Sarah Connor.
3 billion human lives ended on August 29th, 1997.
1997.
The survivors of the nuclear fire called the War Judgment Day. They lived only to face a new nightmare. The war against the machines.
War of cheese.
The computer which controlled the machines, Skynet, sent two Terminators back through time.
Oh! Titular line.
3 billion in the war, the Resistance was able to send a lone warrior, a protector for John. It was just a question of which one of them would reach him first.
So it's the second attempt to go back in time, this time to kill Sarah Connor's actual son, John Connor, after he's born. Pretty decent premise for the film. Linda Hamilton, I liked it. There was definitely some action within like the first minute of the movie where you get to see a little bit of a gunfight and war between the machines and humans. Nothing too groundbreaking though, just bringing you back into the world of Terminator.
I have to say one of my favorite parts of the Terminator score is when it gets to the cool slow part. And so here it comes, and you hear that clanging sound, which is actually the one of the frying pans of the composer that he slowed down to make for his theme for Terminator.
Wow, that's cool.
Dun 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 bonk. Bonk.
I do like the if I'm being honest with you, I don't hate the original intro, but I do like the revamped intro in Terminator 2. The drums in it are much stronger.
Yeah, much
it's a little
quality.
Bit it's a little bit less synthy. The quality of the first score for Terminator 1 has a very indie feel, which is it's cool. Don't
it's,
get me
it's
wrong.
A little cheesy.
I like it.
It's a little cheesy.
But it's cheesy in the right way. Like, it's cheesy, like, these are the things that I had to make. Like, okay, so Terminator 2, you had the whole grocery store open to you, when in Terminator 1, you had bologna, eggs, and like, half a cup of milk and maybe some flour to make that movie, right? Like,
I think you almost had like 8 years worth of synthesizers, so that you're up to the 1988 synthesizer.
Yeah.
So, which probably could have been a nice Juno or a good Roland at that time. So, real realistic sounds, good sounds that actually sound like real strings and whatnot.
So, the movie opens up after that with a time traveler. And our first...
It's very sad that there isn't a black guy in a trash truck to
What the hell? what the hell is this?
Hit him in the nuts? What are you talking about? Hitting him in the telephone?
So this time it's motherfucking Arnold. He's reached the past first, fully nude this time. And spoiler alert, our hero of this film... he walks into a local dive bar to acquire some clothes. He picks out a big biker dude to acquire said clothes. You know, he's walking around scanning people. I don't know why, I really love this part when he's walking through and there's this one, like, overweight barmaid. Do you know the part I'm talking about? Where she, like,
look
looks at
face.
Him, she's like, oh! Oh, and it's just like this fucking gnarly look. I don't know why. Every time I watch that part, I'm like, I got to see the fat barmaid who's like, oh, look at this naked guy in here.
Oh my gosh, there's a naked guy. So,
yeah, she would have fucked Arnold right there.
So the IMDb gives the special info on this shot that apparently a female passerby actually wandered onto the biker bar set thinking it was real. Despite walking past all the location trucks, cameras, and lights, seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger standing in the bar dressed only in boxer shorts, she wondered aloud what was going on, only for Schwarzenegger to reply that it was a male stripper night.
That's a good bit. It's a good bit.
Gosh. Oh, Arnold, you are governor worthy.
You think
so.
I'm just taking my cockles out for no reason? Come on, get serious.
I really want to get naked during this. No, you don't need to be naked.
Maria, come on, don't bullshit me. Do you think I do this for free?
I want to show my buttocks on the screen.
Look at my pectoral, they're not implants. I made them for real. God damn it, come on.
Why did I work on my glutes if I can't show them in the film?
So he eyes up this badass biker dude who looks about to be the same size as him, slightly older, and this happens.
I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
That pops.
Hey. Forgot to say please.
You forgot to say please.
Am I the only one who thinks he kind of sounds like Judge Reinhold right there? Like, he forgot to
say
please.
It was Judge Reinhold. It was just all that makeup.
So he eyes the guy up, and the guy burns a cigar on Arnold's chest. He's unfazed because he's a fucking Terminator. Jacks his arm up. The guys attack him with a pool stick. He fucks them up. Ends up throwing the guy onto like a burning thing, a stove.
It's obviously that the guy with the pool stick was Chris Connolly from Soundgarden attacking him.
Yeah. So Arnold gets the keys to his bike and the clothes off his back, and he comes out of this fucking bar full leather daddy.
Like he just came out of the set of Cruisin' with Al Pacino.
Yeah. Welcome to Cruisin' the Video Game.
Make eye contact.
Ooh, looks like he's into water sports. But while this happens, the local bartender walks out with a shotgun and threatens our good friend Arnold.
I can't let you take the man's wheel, son. Now get off before I put you down.
So Arnold does this completely slow walk towards this guy, and as he gets face to face with him, does like the fucking Bruce Lee super speed, like boom, and then grabs the shotgun before he can get off a shot. And now he has a fucking shotgun, and then he stops to pull the cool ass shades off of this guy's overalls, which, can I mention, this guy shouldn't have sunglasses that cool, right? Like, that. The guy who walks out, he looks like the gentleman on the cover of the movie Slaughterhouse and should not have glasses that are, like, $90 glasses that he can just, like, swipe off of your fucking Oshkosh bagoshes.
Well, the whole bar is just a front for a meth lab anyway, so he can afford whatever glasses he wants. So it makes total sense to me.
So, next, we hear our second traveler enter the fray. And this time, it's Robert Patrick as the T-1000. But he's greeted by a LAPD officer, right? So,
and obviously, it should be very obvious that he's a Terminator, because he comes in very cold, and obviously doesn't matter if his environment is burning red hot also.
And so anticlimactic, basically the cop walks over, he sees like a giant circular burn mark in the chain link fence, which he's like, that's pretty weird. That doesn't look good. And then Robert Patrick just gives him a gut punch that immediately incapacitates him.
Pretty much goes right through him.
Yeah, well, we still, at this point in the movie, we don't know that he can make knives and shit out of his arms, so it just looks like if you were the first time you're watching this movie, it just looks like a guy getting punched in the stomach.
Yeah. They obviously wants to make it a question as to which Terminator is the good or the bad, since Arnold was bad in the first one. And Reese was obviously the good guy, but when Reese comes in, he's like almost shaking like a child that had just given birth and screaming before he stakes some bum's pants, so...
And he stole my pants!
So the T-1000 then takes the police cruiser and immediately starts looking for John Connor.
Give me two more seconds.
Okay.
Hey, buddy, did you just see a real bright light?
Good T1 reference. I like it.
Oh, gosh. We love our good actors. So,
next, we get to meet John Connor's stepmama, who is none other than?
Jeanette Goldstein.
Who is from?
Aliens.
And her name in the movie is?
Aren't You Mistaken for a Man, Vasquez?
Yes! God, all two for twos right there, Jeremy.
I hate to say, when I think of Terminator, it's probably a movie that I've seen more actors in person than any other movie, because I've definitely met Hamilton, I've met Furlong, I've met and actually worked with Patrick, I've met Goldstein. I don't know if I met the man, but, and also if Edward Furlong actually sexually harassing me and touching my tit.
Yeah,
as well.
As documented earlier on the show, for sure.
I'm trying to think of all the other little actors through the movie. I never met the doctor.
Never met him.
Never met the twins that turn into the Terminator.
Have you ever met the one chick in the jail who has like this real like Boris Karloff haircut that gets punched? Did you meet that lady?
No, exactly. I know who you're talking about.
I know you know who I'm talking about. She has an unmistakable haircut. There's no way you can unsee it.
That's about all the actors in the... Oh, no, I might have had a chance to meet...
have you met Silverman?
Miles Dyson. No, Silverman I never got to meet. I don't even know if he's alive anymore. But, yeah, that's about it. But I've met almost all the essentials except for Schwarzenegger, so...
So we get to meet Vasquez's mom, Mom Vasquez.
Oh, and of course, Michael Bane. We met Michael Bane together.
We met Michael Bane together. So. And here is the interaction between... Well, this next audio clip shows the dynamic between stepmother and son.
Mom, get in there and clean up that pig sky. John.
foster parents are kind of dicks, huh?
I swear, I have had it with that goddamn kid. He won't even answer me anymore.
Honey, move.
Would you get off your butt and help me? Todd! Come on!
John! Come on, get your ass inside. Do what your mother tells you.
She's not my mother, Todd.
is that the evil leader of Hilltop in Walking Dead?
Yes, it is. That is the same guy. And it's also the first time that you get to see our young John Connor, played by Ed Furlong, being really fucking cool.
And that's another lesson on being cool with Ed Furlong.
Oh, gosh.
So Ed Furlong, who is probably the only downside to this entire film, does nothing but try to be cool this whole film, okay? And listens to only one track from Appetite for Destruction the entire time he rides around.
Use Your Illusion, either one or two with You Could Be Mine.
Okay,
which features Schwarzenegger.
It doesn't matter.
The video.
The only song that they play is this song. You would be mine. You could be mine.
Yep.
Anyway, next we get to meet John's real mom, who's up in the loony bin. When we get to meet a familiar face from the previous film, Dr. Silverman, as he's walking through the halls of the loony bin.
This next patient is interesting. I've been following the case for years. 29-year-old female. Diagnosed as acute schizoaffective disorder. The usual indicators: depression, anxiety, violent acting out, delusions of persecution.
The delusional architecture is fairly unique. She believes that a machine called a Terminator, which looks human, of course, was sent back through time to kill her.
That's original.
And also that the father of her child was a soldier sent back to protect her.
No.
He was from the future, too. The year 2029, if I remember correctly. And here we are.
Morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Dr. Silverman. How's the knee?
Fine, Sarah.
She stabbed me in the kneecap with my pen a few weeks ago. Repeated escape attempts. Douglas, I don't like to see the patients disrupting their rooms like this. See that she takes her Thorazine, would you?
Sure, Dr. Silverman, I'll take care of it.
I'll rape the hell out of her.
So these disorderlies then come up to Sarah, who's been doing some real hard pull-ups this entire time, and rough her up real good, cattle prod her, and administer Sarah's meds. And that's what I call fucking service right there, okay?
Always,
service with a fucking smile.
And always finish with a good lick to the face.
Yeah, no, they don't lick her on the face here, but that's coming. I really love Linda Hamilton in this scene. In the first movie, she's kind of a bit of a damsel in distress. And in this movie, she is fucking hardcore. I am a soldier, and I will fucking murder you at any chance I have. And I really feel like this whole first opening scene where she's just fucking sweaty, I cut out a lot of the audio of her just breathing heavy, like... just getting fucking jacked inside of her fucking cell, even though she weighs literally like 109 pounds of just fury, though. Absolute fury.
She goes from being a waitress at a Bob's Big Boy to actually killing a Terminator with her boyfriend, making little cheap C4s. So
yeah, with pipe bombs and a giant press. So, next, we see the T-1000 visit John's step-parents.
Are you the legal guardian of John Connor?
That's right, officer. What's he done now?
Could I speak with him, please?
Could if you were here. He took off on his bike this morning, so he could be anywhere.
Do you have a photograph of John?
Yeah, sure. Hold on.
You gonna tell me what this is about?
I just need to ask him a few questions. He's a good-looking boy. Do you mind if I keep this picture?
No, go on. There was a guy here this morning looking for him, too.
Yeah, big guy on a bike. Has that got something to do with this?
No. I wouldn't worry about him. Thanks for your cooperation.
Whoa.
I hate to say the T-1000 almost has a cooler soundbite than Boba Fett.
I like the quiet one where he mentions the other Terminator and he's like, no, I wouldn't worry about him.
He's a older model. T-800.
It is very good how Robert Patrick plays it, though, because he's not Arnold. He looks like just a skinny guy who's probably the most deadly thing that you'll ever see in a film. I mean, is there anything... I know we talk about, like, a Terminator or an Alien or Predator. Which would you rather go against? If I'm being honest with you, T-1000 is my last choice out of all of those. You throw T-1000 and Robert Patrick, a shape-shifting thing that can just look like a fucking wall when you walk by? No, I'm out, dude. I fight anything other than that thing.
And worst thing comes to worst, how are you going to fight it unless you either have... good access to liquid nitrogen or a lava pit.
Yeah, unless you could throw him into fucking Mordor. What are you going to fucking carry him around? You got to find hot lava to defeat a T-1000?
Either that or have like a good ice chest with some nitroglycerin in it. Like, okay, at least he's in this ice chest.
By the way, in the future, they talk about how they have to send these machines back to the past because the humans are winning. How the fuck are they beating them in the future? How the fuck? If there's like 10 of these T-1000s, how do you stop any of them? It makes no sense at all.
Okay, the only difference that I would have made in the fight scene towards the end is that when the T-1000 is destroyed and it comes back to life, that literally two half T-1000s come back and they're both fighting midgets that come after them. So
I'm good T-1000 and I'm bad T-1000. You're a little goody two-shoes.
And the fact that they even tried to find little Robert Patricks that look like Robert Patrick, but they're midgets, South.
We all know Warwick Davis would get the gig, baby.
Yep. And they digitally make him too, so.
So next we see John and his buddy hacking an ATM with a fancy calculator that, Jeremy, you actually owned one of these one time. Yes, you did. I remember
you. Sure?
Did you not?
I don't think so. I looked at it and it was like some sort of... I don't know, mid-grade 90s computer. Was it the 90s? No, it was the 80s, wasn't
it? It's a 90s. It's a late 80s, early 90s
definitely
little palm computer that has like... It was released in the UK called the DIP Pocket PC, released in 1989.
Oh,
soon after its release, the DIP licensed this product to Atari for sale as the Portfolio in the UK and US. And a couple other countries. DIP officially stood for Distributed Information Processing, although secretly it actually stood for David Ian Peter. The three founding members of the company who were former employees. Pision? The Portfolio appears in the film Terminator 2 Judgment Day, where it's used by young John Connor to bypass security on an ATM with a ribbon cable connecting the Portfolio's parallel interface to a magstrip card. The Portfolio reappears later in the movie when John uses it at Cyberdyne Systems Lab to retrieve a key from the vault containing the arm and the CPU in the second Terminator. All right. I thought there was going to be some more information there, but that's about it. It's just a piece of plastic that a real shitty computer, I don't think could actually hack an ATM no matter how hard you tried. So next we go back to the loony bin and Sarah is visited by none other than Kyle Reese. And I believe this is a deleted scene from the original film, probably for a good reason. But of all the deleted scenes... I'm a big Michael Biehn fan, and I had to include it in tonight's episode.
Kyle. Dad.
Where's our son, Sarah?
He took him away from me.
He's the target now.
I know.
He's all alone. You have to protect him.
I know. You tell me how I'm supposed to do that. He doesn't even believe me anymore. I've lost him.
You're strong, Sarah. Stronger than you ever thought you could be. On your feet, soldier. I love you, Sarah. I always will.
I need you.
I'll always be with you. Remember the message. The future is not set. There is no fate but what we make for ourselves.
Stay with me.
There's not much time left in the world, Sarah.
So as this dream that she's having progresses, Kyle runs down the hallway and Sarah chases after her, then bursting through some double doors out into a courtyard with a bunch of children playing, which comes into play later when Sarah has another dream sequence, which is basically her dream of Judgment Day. But you don't get the full boom pop that you get later in the film. And we'll go more into depth on that, most likely in episode two.
My other favorite part is when Michael Biehn says, "There's still a chance for you, Sarah. A chance for a sequel. Maybe even a chronicle." So
she wakes up and it is review board time to see if she can get out of jail. And Silverman takes her into this room and they show her one of her past reviews.
"I know the date it happens.
I'm sure it feels very real to you.
On August 29th, 1997, it's gonna feel pretty fucking real to you, too. Anybody not wearing 2 million sunblock is gonna have a real bad day, get it? God, you think you're safe and alive? You're already dead, everybody. Him, you, you're dead already. This whole place, everything you see is gone. You're the one living in a fucking dream, Solomon, because I knew it happens. It happens!
I gotta be honest with you, I freaked out a little bit that day. I overreacted, but I'm feeling much better now. And I wanna come back into society, if that's okay.
Now, Sarah, you did try to make a spaceship, and you are a shapeshifter now. You wanna explain that?
Listen, I didn't want to tell you this, Silverman, but you're actually on a hidden camera show right now.
You've been juiced by OJ.
You just got juiced.
I stabbed them all. They didn't see it coming. And this week, OJ kills 5 more guests on our show. They didn't see it coming, but I killed them all.
So the interview continues between Silverman and Sarah Connor.
Let's go back to what you were saying about those Terminator machines. Now you think they don't exist.
They don't exist. I know that now.
But you've told me on many occasions about how you crushed one in a hydraulic press.
Well, if I had, there would have been some evidence. They would have found something at the factory.
I see.
And that was at Cyberdyne, wasn't it?
The company covered it up.
No. Why would they?
Now, Sarah, the fact that they're working on Skynet wouldn't bother you at all.
Triggered!
They said that Skynet is also very interested in hiring your son to help them with the company.
Weep, 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 weep.
Oh, bring on, Alanis Morissette, because it's so very ironic. So,
but as we mostly know, as most of us already know, it turns out she's exactly right. They did find some pieces that were left over from this Terminator. Cyberdyne Tech has multiple things. We get to meet Mr. Dyson right after this, who is a young scientist who's working at Cyberdyne Industries, and he takes a key and opens a vault that where it's revealed to us that they are holding on to the Neuronet processor from the original Terminator, as well as a part of the arm that still exists.
We found this processor that could handle hundreds of megabytes worth of information that we could never have figured out before.
Imagine a world where you could play 3 games of Pong all at the same time, simultaneously. Could you even imagine it? Think about it.
The graphics for Street Fighter were almost realistic.
Imagine putting on a virtual reality suit where you could fuck a unicorn. That's the future I want to live in. Dyson has some real interesting views about what the future is going to be, is what we're getting at.
We had changed our entire product line from straight porn to killing the world.
Imagine a world where we put on these virtual glasses and everybody looks white.
Except for the aliens.
Except for the aliens. And then nobody can be racist anymore, because whatever glasses you put on, everybody looks the same color.
There's one who can see. Well, I ain't going with Childs. I'm going with Windows.
I'm going with Windows. So, back at the hospital, Silverman breaks it down to Sarah and reminds her that he thinks that she's lying and she's not going to minimum security. It would just prompt another escape from her. Sarah fucking snaps and immediately attacks him, justifying his beliefs. Meanwhile, John and his buddy are still riding around listening to the same Guns N' Roses song. I need to admit, like 15 minutes of the movie have elapsed, and they're still listening to You Could Be Mine.
What if you had bought a single?
Single that's cassette. The only thing you can listen to. Yeah. Okay, makes sense.
My favorite part about Silverman. Oh, gosh. Sarah, you still believe in Scientology, don't you? No!
No! I'm much better. I'm clear now, Dr. Silverman. You know that. I believe in Xenu. Yeah, I like it. He's just like, tell me more about this wacky Terminator. Okay. No, Dr. Silverman, I know that Xenu is our only savior because he released the souls into and prevented Judgment Day.
And you're
Day.
A psychologist who can't makes me think otherwise.
I see some negative thoughts creeping in.
Now, can we use the little electronic thing again? So,
While they go to head to the local mall, the T-1000 finds some helpful teens that point the T-1000 in the direction of the arcade. His buddy runs into the T-1000. T-1000 even shows him a picture saying, have you seen this boy? But the kid, good friend, just like, nah, never seen him. Immediately goes to warn John.
Now, don't get me wrong, but this was your time. You know, watching Nickelodeon, wasn't it the same kid who was on Awful Waffle Time?
I believe
that little redhead kid.
The actor in this movie is none other. I gotta see the full cast because I do recognize him. He's from a Nickelodeon show. I want to say it's Pete and Pete. But
no,
I know
that was a totally
no,
different show.
I think it's Salute Your Shorts.
Salute
He's from
your shorts.
Salute Your Shorts. And I'm trying to remember the kid's name here. But his picture isn't.
And
readily.
Also, by the way, great mullet for the day.
It is. It's a strong fucking mullet.
A fucking
strong ass
ginger mullet.
Is it this guy? No. Although that guy's fucking cool looking. Douglas, Twin Sarah, Miles Dyson. It's got to be right around here. Danny Coxley? Is this him?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's Danny Coxley. Yeah, he's from Salute Your Shorts. I was right. Yes! And he's from Different Strokes as well.
Oh, great.
Future episode, Different Strokes, Bicycle Man episodes coming out.
It's got to be like the future Different Strokes, not the old Different Strokes. He would have been like 5 years old.
It said 1984 to 1986. That's when he was in.
Wow.
So... he was a character on that. But I do remember him from Salute Your Shorts. He's the dickhead in that.
It's Awful Waffle Time.
Makes sense, because he's a fucking dick. His friend goes and warns John about what's about to happen. So, but the T-1000 immediately spots him, and he has to go make a run for it. He runs into the back, if you're familiar how malls are set up, there's the storefronts, and then there's like an access hallway generally behind all the stores where you can get into like the employees kind of walk around. So he makes a fucking...
I know the date it happened.
He makes a fucking he makes a run for it into that hallway, but he runs into Arnold, who's holding a rose box, and immediately produces a shotgun. So he's immediately spooked by it, starts running,
down.
And then shoots the T-1000 behind him. He shields John from the hailfire of bullets that come out from the T-1000, and then turns around and fills the fucking T-1000 with, like, six or seven shotgun blasts right here, each one leaving, like, a giant circular disc in his fucking chest. Pretty badass. They immediately, like, reform and heal. The T-1000 gets up and starts a hand-to-hand combat with the Terminator in the hallway. Lots of bricks are broken in this scene, and it ultimately ends with the Terminator getting chucked through a fucking window of the Galleria, which is pretty badass, though. Pretty badass little fight scene they have there.
Pretty much almost exact scene-for-scene, cut-for-cut, where he goes through the window at... Trey's Lounge or whatever it is, the club whatever in Terminator 1 where he gets shot through the shotgun.
Yeah, very similar.
And he ends up getting back up again, so.
He's good at one thing, and it's going through panes of glass. Let me tell you, no pane of glass is going to stop Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And of course, the Terminator, he gets knocked down, he gets up again. Nothing going to keep him down. So.
Ain't nobody going to stop me now. Nobody going to hold me down. Oh, no. I got to keep on terminating. So John makes a run for it, gets to his dirt bike, and the T-1000 chases him on foot, then realizes he's not going to catch up with him, and commandeers an 18-wheeler. Not our only 18-wheeler chase scene of the movie, but our first of the evening. He basically chases him through the streets trying to run him over. John then takes a drainage ditch area and goes and rides down there. The Terminator,
rivers of LA.
Yeah, the Terminator's following closely behind, though, on his motorcycle. He's trying to blast off shots with the shotgun, which I don't think there's an ever cooler way to shoot a shotgun than the way Arnold does it in this sequence. Because he has, like, the lever-action shotgun, and every time he reloads it, he does, like, a full spin, like, twirls it to, like, cock it. Ah, oh, God. There's nothing more badass than
it. And everybody knows that if you're riding somewhere on a bike, you can just shoot at a lock from a distance, and it'll still instantly unlock so you can keep going through fences.
Well, Arnold, the master of unlocking, could do such things. Arnold eventually drops down. Well, first you see the 18-wheeler. It, like, drops down into the... John stops for a second. He thinks he's lost it. And then all of a sudden he sees the 18-wheeler crash through the bridge. And then not break into a million pieces, but continue driving in that little drainage place that John's riding his dirt bike. So now the chase is on there. Arnold eventually catches up to him. He swerves past to get around that 18-wheeler. Just as it's about to crush John, picks him up by his jacket, throws him on the back. Arnold then turns around, blasts the front tire of the fucking 18-wheeler. It crashes into some stone structure in the middle of the thing, explodes. A tire comes out, and Arnold immediately cocks it again like he's going to shoot that thing. And then they drive off.
Obviously, they'd never seen the movie Rubber, because that tire could have been dangerous.
Yeah,
and
it really
exploded somebody's head.
But right after they leave, they quickly see the T-1000 emerge from the flames like the mighty Phoenix, completely unscathed from that encounter. Overall, great scene, right, Jer?
Well, you know, cutting edge for its time, and even though the CGI might have been kind of lacking, we still thought it was cool for its day.
I mean, I still don't even hate the CGI. I don't hate it. I definitely don't hate the CGI in this film. I hate some of the other deleted ones that they put in later in the film. But, I mean, it's liquid metal. I'm like, okay, okay, that's how metal, I guess, would look, kind of. So, no, it wasn't fucking horrible. So John and the Terminator then stop to have a quick chat, and John finds out that the basically the guy who just saved him is none other than a Terminator, and he tells him his mission.
This is tense. Get a grip, John. Okay. You're not here to kill me. I figured that part out for myself. So what's the deal?
My mission is to protect you.
Yeah? Who sent you?
You did. 35 years from now, you reprogrammed me to be your protector here, in this time.
This is deep.
Whoa. This is deep, bro. Wicked deep.
Has the... Obviously, the atmosphere changed in the future, so everything's heavier. What is this talk of heavy? I don't know, Doc, but I'm shaking just thinking about it.
So, the Terminator tells him about the T-1000, that he's basically a more advanced Terminator, basically liquid metal. He can make fucking sharp, stabby objects out of his hands, but nothing like guns or anything mechanical like that. John wants to go back to his place to go get some stuff, but the Terminator advises against it, saying that's exactly where he would go to look for him next. So John decides to call his family, his step-parents, and give them a heads up.
I'd like to re-edit the film so that the only thing that the Terminator T-1000 can make is plastic dicks to throw at people. So it's his only weapons. He just has so many dicks to throw at us. What are we gonna do?
So John calls his step parents on a payphone, and we get this.
What's the dog's name?
Max. Hey Janelle, what's wrong with Wolfie? I can hear him barking. Is he okay?
Wolfie's fine, honey. Wolfie's just fine. What are you?
Your foster parents are dead.
And, like, the camera widens out from Vasquez talking on the phone to see that her arm is like this giant sword that stabbed the stepfather through the fucking mouth, and through the milk and the mouth. It's pretty badass. Pretty badass. And then
Jeanette Goldstein and her nice upper cut shirt. So showing that she's still feminine, even mm-hmm. though she might be mistaken for a man. Now, do we point out that Jeanette Goldstein is part of the three trinity of James Cameron?
No, we haven't.
Now she's very close. There's only two, obviously being Lance Henriksen and Bill Paxton, that have been killed by an alien and a predator and a Terminator, and I think also Swamp Thing. And maybe Superman. So I might get that wrong.
I like that you called him Swamp Thing.
Swamp
That's
thing.
Actually...
Swamp.
A lot of people don't know this, but there was a run of the DC comic superhero Swamp Thing that where he mashed up with Sammy Davis Jr., actually. And he was called, "Hey, it's me, the Swamp Thing, Daddy." Oh, yeah. I'm feeling like a cool cat tonight. It's me, Swamp Thing. Oh.
So, of course, I think Jeanette deserves at least a Cameron 3 movie kill, because of course she gets killed as Vasquez, she gets killed by a Terminator in this one, but also gets killed by the Titanic.
That is true.
So
that is true.
To me, that's the third creature, even though obviously you have Lance Henriksen killed as a robot by the alien, killed as by the Terminator in the first movie, and killed by the alien in Alien versus Predator. So
okay. So back at the hospital, the cops come to question Sarah about the Terminator that was spotted at the mall. They show her the shots of the Terminator from Terminator 1, where he took out an entire police precinct, and then they show him surveillance cameras from the mall, and it's the same fucking guy. They're like, "You know who this guy is? Can you tell us?" But she's not talking. She's basically completely comatose at this point.
Another great film is a Terminator Assault on Precinct 13.
Yes. So. Yes, it is. But while the cops are talking to her, Sarah's able to commandeer a paperclip off the table that she snatches for later use. Now, back with John and the Terminator, John comes to the realization that basically he has, the Terminator takes orders from John. So whatever he says he'll do, he makes him stand on one foot. When all of a sudden, some bozos come over and John goes to teach them a quick lesson.
Now who's the dipshit, you jock douchebag?
Terminator goes to rough these guys up.
No! Put the gun down now! Get out of here!
Come on, guys, split! Come on!
Put Man. The gun down now! Down now! Ow! 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 Ow!
I don't know.
Get out of here!
Come on, guys, split! Come on!
Jesus, you're gonna kill that guy!
Of course, I'm a Terminator.
I'm a Terminator.
Of course, I'm a Terminator. Can't you see this chemistry we're forming on screen right now?
I just
now?
Wish that he says, yes, I'm a Terminator too.
And Arnold Eddie Furlong then says, tries to calm down the Terminator.
Be very carefully, okay? You're not a Terminator anymore, all right? You got that? You just can't go around killing people.
Why?
What do you mean, why? Because you can't.
Why?
Because you just can't, okay? Trust me on this. Look, I'm gonna go get my mom, and I order you to help me.
Ooh.
Your mother is perfectly fine. She's just being raped right now by probably an orderly.
Well, we'll get into that in episode two, but I think that's gonna bring us to an end of episode one of Terminator 2, Jeremy.
Episode one.
The stage is now set. We've met the characters. We got the good guys. We got the bad guys. And hopefully, we're going to get to see Sarah Connor a lot more in episode two.
When does she meet the Beast in the sewers?
It's coming up. That is very soon. You know who that Beast is played by? I didn't know this.
Stuart Patinkin?
No. It's not other than, what's his name? Perlman, the guy who played Hellboy.
No, that's, it isn't.
That is the Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
Is it Ron Perlman?
It's Ron Perlman who plays the Beast. Isn't that crazy?
I thought it was another act. I thought it was, what's his name, who plays San Francisco from the original... the one where James Caan has the creatures that like soured milk.
I'm going to pull it up right now. Beauty and the Beast TV series. Let's go to...
And he's also a singer. I think he sings on Broadway and whatnot.
Let's go to characters.
I'm pretty sure...
Vincent...
Enemy something... Alien Nation, that's right.
Vincent, who is the Beast in it, played by actor Ron Perlman.
Oh, it was Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman played the Beast in Beauty and the Beast. I never watched the show Beauty and the Beast. Was it any good?
I probably watched two episodes, but otherwise I wouldn't care.
It's not the story Beauty and the Beast. He's just a man with lion-like features.
Right.
Just like any other dude that you'd see on the street, right, Jer?
It's like the two things that he hates in life and loves is the sun on his face. So.
I agree. So tune in next week to hear more about that. You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Eric with a K, comedy with a C. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month. It's run by Kimberly Callahan and my good friend Michael Quindlin. Check that out. I got a bunch of shows coming up in the next... all the time. So go ahead and check that shit out. I'm always traveling, always doing work. Check out Baby Eater when that drops. Leave us a 5-star rating on the iTunes, the Stitcher, or whatever platform you listen to us on. We would greatly appreciate it. Jeremy, take us out.
Why shouldn't I kill them? I'm a Terminator. Achy, achy, achy.